When Rome collapsed, Europe plunged into darkness as libraries burned and civilization teetered on extinction's edge. But amidst this chaos, one man's vision would save Western culture itself. St. Benedict of Nursia created something revolutionary. Monasteries that became islands of literacy and stability in a crumbling world, like candles fighting back the overwhelming dark. These sanctuaries preserved ancient wisdom when all seemed lost. Benedict's motto, Succisia verescit, cut down, it grows back stronger, embodied his enduring legacy. Without him, we might have lost everything from Aristotle to agriculture. This is how a humble monk saved Western civilization. Part 1, the crumbling world into which Benedict was born. What happens when a civilization that took 1,000 years to build suddenly collapses? This wasn't a hypothetical question for those living in the late 5th century Italy. It was their daily reality. The world that Benedict of Nursia was born into around 480 AD was experiencing unprecedented societal transformation as the mighty Western Roman Empire crumbled into fragments. Imagine a world where everything familiar was disappearing. Roman infrastructure, the aqueducts carrying fresh water, public baths, and the famous road network fell into disrepair without the imperial administration to maintain them. Cities that once bustled with commerce shrank dramatically as populations fled to the countryside, seeking safety in an increasingly dangerous landscape. The collapse wasn't merely physical. Knowledge systems Rome had cultivated vanished at an alarming rate. Libraries containing irreplaceable manuscripts of classical learning deteriorated from neglect. Schools that had taught rhetoric, philosophy, and law for generations closed their doors as funding disappeared. The educational institutions that had preserved knowledge for centuries simply disappeared. As societal structures crumbled, trade networks that had connected the Mediterranean world fractured. Specialized goods, once common in Roman marketplaces, became rare luxuries. Even basic technologies were forgotten. Techniques for engineering and medicine and agriculture, refined over centuries, slipped away as fewer people received proper training. Germanic kingdoms now controlled former Roman territories. And while these rulers sometimes attempted to preserve Roman systems, they lacked the institutional knowledge to maintain such complex social structures. Power became increasingly local and fragmented, typically resting with whoever commanded the most armed men in the region. This political fragmentation accelerated intellectual decline. Literacy rates plummeted. Latin evolved rapidly into regional vernaculars, making older texts increasingly difficult to understand. Mathematical knowledge, scientific understanding, and philosophical traditions developed since ancient Greece risked extinction. In this atmosphere of decay, spiritual life became equally chaotic. Christianity had become the empire's official religion, but its institutional structure was weakest precisely where now it was needed the most, in rural areas and small communities. Outside major cities, organized religious structures barely existed. Christian beliefs mingled with persistent pagan practices in a confusing spiritual landscape. Many rural communities continued ancient traditions of nature worship. Others embraced Christianity, but with limited theological understanding. Without consistent guidance, spiritual life became a patchwork of beliefs, mirroring the broader fragmentation of society. A profound question hung over this disintegrating world. What solution could possibly emerge from such a comprehensive chaos? How could knowledge survive when institutions designed to protect it were vanishing? What force could hold together the fragments of a shattered civilization? The answer would come from an unexpected source, not from remaining political powers or wealthy elites, but from a young man born into a noble family in Nursia, who would eventually turn away from the traditional path set before him. Benedict's response to this collapsing world would create a system so resilient that it would not only survive the coming centuries of turmoil, but would become fundamental to preserving the very civilization that was crumbling around him. From privileged student to cave-dwelling hermit. While Rome's institutions crumbled, a privileged young man named Benedict made an extraordinary choice that defied all logic. He abandoned his education, his wealth, and ultimately, human company itself. In the depths of a nearly inaccessible cave, sustained only by lowered bread on a rope, he would confront the demons that plagued his own soul and an entire dying civilization. Born into nobility in Nursia, Benedict received the finest education available in late 5th century Italy. His parents sent him to Rome to study literature and law, traditional subjects for young noblemen destined for administration or politics, but Rome had become a shadow of its former greatness. The splendid monuments remained, but Benedict found himself increasingly troubled by the moral decay among his peers who pursued knowledge yet indulged in hedonistic pleasures. What purpose does this education serve, Benedict wondered, if it creates scholars without virtue? The disconnect between intellectual pursuit and moral character tormented him. Rome's prestigious knowledge now seemed an empty echo, divorced from any deeper meaning. Benedict retreated to Infide, seeking escape from Rome's corrupting influence. And there his spiritual journey began, and when he repaired a broken sieve through prayer after his nurse had accidentally damaged it, the locals celebrated this miracle. Benedict recognized a new danger, public acclaim, and chose a more radical path. He disappeared into the wilderness of Subiaco, finding a remote cave that matched his desire for complete solitude. The narrow, dark space became his home for 3 years. Cold stone walls surrounded him by day and night, the silence broken only by the occasional tinkle of a small bell announcing bread being lowered by Romanus, a monk who secretly supported him. Even this tenuous connection faced opposition. Tradition holds that the devil once broke the bell, attempting to sever Benedict's last human link. In this profound isolation, with only the drip of water and his own breathing for company, Benedict confronted his internal demons. Memories of a woman he had once seen triggered intense carnal desires that echoed against the stone walls of his sanctuary. The struggle became so unbearable that Benedict threw himself into thorns and nettles, his skin tearing as physical pain overcame the lustful thoughts. The cold cave floor beneath his bloodied body, he later claimed that this painful experience freed him permanently from such temptations. Without teachers, books, conversation, Benedict's spiritual life deepened through prayer, scripture that he had memorized, and direct spiritual experience. The rhythmic prayers that filled his solitary hours would later form the foundation of his monastic rule. Eventually, shepherds discovered the hermit. These rough herdsmen, described as living a beastly life, found themselves transformed through many encounters with Benedict. Many converted to lives of devotion, and word spread about the holy man. And people increasingly journeyed through difficult terrain to seek wisdom from the nobleman who had chosen poverty and isolation to find spiritual wealth. Poison in the cup, Benedict's miraculous survival, and growing influence. As Benedict's reputation spread beyond shepherds to religious communities, his spiritual authority would be tested not by demons in the wilderness, but by those who had ostensibly dedicated their lives to God. When the abbot of a nearby monastery at Vicovaro died, the monks there approached Benedict with an unexpected request. They wanted this renowned holy man to become their leader. Despite his initial reluctance, Benedict eventually acquiesced to their persistent appeals, believing it might be divine providence calling him to a new phase of his spiritual journey. This transition from solitary contemplation to communal leadership quickly revealed a fundamental conflict. Benedict's understanding of monastic discipline clashed dramatically with the lax practices at Vicovaro. The monks had grown accustomed to comfortable interpretations of their religious vows, while Benedict insisted on genuine prayer, meaningful work, and true self-discipline, principles that these men had no intention of embracing. Unable to accept Benedict's leadership, the monks devised a sinister solution, and they prepared poisoned wine, and they presented it to Benedict during their communal meal. Following his custom, Benedict made the sign of the cross over the cup, which immediately shattered, spilling its deadly contents. The monks watched in horror as their murder plot was exposed through divine intervention. Benedict addressed them with remarkable composure, tinged with disappointment. "May God forgive you, brothers. Did I not tell you that my ways and yours could never agree? Go, find an abbot to your own liking." And without seeking vengeance, Benedict simply acknowledged the incompatibility between his authentic vision and their resistance to reform. And as he departed Vicovaro, he felt the weight of this first significant human betrayal, yet remained steadfast in his convictions. His trials continued when a local priest named Florentius, envious of Benedict's growing influence, sent him a poisoned loaf of bread. Benedict, discerning its true nature, commanded a raven that regularly fed from his hand to carry the bread to a place where no man can find it. The obedient bird demonstrated both Benedict's divine protection and his connection with the natural world. These attempts on his life paradoxically strengthened Benedict's reputation. The poisoned cup and the faithful raven became powerful testaments to his authenticity in a world of religious pretense. Yet for Benedict himself, these experiences provided crucial insight that would shape his future work. He responded without retaliation or bitter denunciation. Instead, these betrayals deepened his understanding of human weakness and the challenges of creating genuine spiritual community. Benedict recognized that monastic life required more than good intentions. It needed clear structures, balanced authority, and practical wisdom. These incidents revealed a profound truth that would later inform every aspect of his rule. Even religious communities could harbor jealousy and resentment when not properly ordered. This realization led Benedict to develop his balanced approach to communal living, combining prayer and work, careful governance, moderation rather than extremes, and compassionate yet firm discipline. Through these painful experiences, Benedict began formulating the framework that would eventually revolutionize Western monasticism and provide a resilient structure for the spiritual life that endures to this day. The rule that saved civilization, Benedict's revolutionary balance. The poison incidents didn't embitter Benedict. They crystallized his understanding of what sustainable spiritual communities needed. While others saw monastic life as either brutal self-denial or loose guidelines, Benedict recognized a revolutionary middle path. At Monte Cassino in 529 AD, as the remnants of Roman order continued to dissolve around him, Benedict began writing what would become the most influential guide to religious community living the Western world had ever seen. Unlike other monastic traditions that either demanded superhuman sacrifice or provided insufficient structure, Benedict's rules struck an ingenious balance. Eastern desert fathers often practiced extreme fasting and sleep deprivation that few could maintain for long. Other communities lacked comprehensive guidelines, leaving room for inconsistency and eventual breakdown. Benedict's innovation was moderation, a revolutionary concept in a world of extremes. This moderate approach, centered on the principle of ora et labora, right? Like a perfectly balanced scale, with prayer on one side and labor on the other, Benedict created a system where both elements were essential and mutually reinforcing. Previous monastic traditions often elevated contemplation while denigrating manual labor as spiritually inferior. Benedict elevated physical work to a spiritual discipline that grounded prayer in the real world. Intellectual work, including reading and manuscript copying, received equal dignity alongside farming and cooking, creating communities that were both spiritually focused and materially sustainable. The genius of Benedict's system lay in its precise organization of time. The rule structured each day around a liturgy of the hours, fixed prayer services occurring at regular intervals. Between these anchor points of communal worship, monks moved through carefully balanced periods of manual labor, sacred reading, meals, and rest. This rhythm transformed daily life into a spiritual practice while acknowledging human limitations. Benedict addressed communal living with remarkable foresight, creating guidelines for leadership, newcomers, resource management, and care for the sick. These practical provisions formed the sturdy foundation upon which the Benedictine communities built centuries of cultural and spiritual influence. Most radical was Benedict's insistence on stability. Monks committed to remain in their communities for life, rather than wandering between monasteries. This commitment created reliable community anchors that would preserve knowledge and faith throughout Europe's darkest periods. Pope Gregory the Great praised Benedict's rule for its excellent discretion and eloquent style. This discretion manifested in Benedict's balanced approach to correction, with proportionate responses designed to reform behavior while preserving harmony. The rule's adaptability allowed it to function across vastly different environments. Work schedules, clothing, food, and building designs could all adapt to local conditions while maintaining essential rhythms and values, and this flexibility explained how Benedictine monasticism would spread successfully from the Mediterranean to Arctic regions. What made the rule revolutionary was its profound understanding of human psychology. Benedict recognized that extremes, whether of asceticism or indulgence, couldn't sustain most people over a lifetime. By creating a moderate path centered on balance, he designed a system ordinary men could follow for decades, establishing communities that would become the primary preservers and transmitters of the classical knowledge throughout the coming Dark Ages. Sukhisya Veriskit, cut down, yet growing stronger. Benedict's psychological realism created communities of remarkable stability, but he was also a visionary who could see far beyond the present moment. In a striking demonstration of prophetic insight, Benedict gathered his monks at Monte Cassino and shared a troubling vision that would prove eerily accurate. According to Gregory the Great's dialogues, Benedict foresaw that the monks would be dispersed, the buildings leveled, and all the hard work of the community undone. Rather than concealing this devastating prediction, he prepared his followers spiritually for the trials they would eventually face, demonstrating his belief in resilience rather than permanence. This prophecy embodied the profound spiritual principle that would become the Benedictine motto, Sukhisya Veriskit. When cut down, it grows back stronger. Like a phoenix rising from the ashes or a prune tree that returns with great vigor, Benedict understood that destruction could paradoxically strengthen his monastic movement if his followers embraced persistence. History validated Benedict's foresight with remarkable precision. Monte Cassino, the mother abbey of Benedictine monasticism, endured the destruction three times across the centuries: by the Lombards in 581 AD, just decades after Benedict's death, by Serapian invaders in 884 AD, and most tragically by Allied bombs in February 1944. Yet after each devastation, the monastery rose again, embodying Sukhisya Veriskit in the most literal sense. This pattern of destruction and rebirth extended beyond Monte Cassino. Benedictine monasteries throughout Europe faced existential threats from Viking raids, political conflicts, religious upheavals during the Reformation, natural disasters, and wars. The Abbey of St. Martin of Tours, repeatedly sacked by Vikings, continued to function as a major center of learning. The Abbey of Cluny, despite being almost completely dismantled during the French Revolution, preserved its spiritual heritage. The rule's inherent structure enabled Benedictine communities to survive repeated catastrophes, and when danger threatened, monks could temporarily disperse, carrying their knowledge, manuscripts, and commitment to the Benedictine way, and when conditions improved, they would return, rebuilding physical structures while maintaining spiritual continuity. This organizational resilience allowed Benedictine monasticism to weather storms that toppled empires. The emphasis on written records proved crucial during disruption. Monks maintained careful inventories of libraries and landholdings, enabling communities to reconstitute themselves after physical destruction. The priority during attacks was saving manuscripts, biblical texts, classical works, scientific treatises, and practical manuals. Even if one monastery fell permanently, its intellectual treasures had often been copied to sister institutions, creating a distributed network of knowledge preservation. Peer-to-peer sharing. This is medieval Napster. Through cycles of destruction and renewal, Benedictine communities developed exceptional skills in starting over. They became experts in agricultural innovation, mastering techniques to reclaim damaged lands with sustainable practices. The self-sufficiency mandated by Benedict's rule equipped monks with diverse practical skills. Architecture, medicine, livestock breeding, manuscript production, uniquely positioning them to rebuild civilization from its foundation. Each rebuilding incorporated lessons from past calamities. Monasteries were reconstructed with better defenses, more fire-resistant materials, or in protected locations. Library collections were increasingly duplicated and distributed. Agricultural operations became more diverse and resilient. The Benedictine communities didn't simply return to their previous state after destruction. They evolved and improved, truly growing stronger after being cut down. Islands of Literacy in a Sea of Darkness. Among the treasures Benedictine monks protected during centuries of chaos, none was more important than knowledge itself. While monasteries physically rebuilt after destruction, something even more precious was being safeguarded within their walls, the intellectual heritage of an entire civilization. In the scriptoria of these abbeys, monks engaged in what might seem like an ordinary task, copying texts, but this daily discipline would ultimately prevent the complete erasure of classical thought. These scriptoria functioned as sanctuaries of learning, lighthouses guiding civilization through intellectual darkness. Inside these specialized workshops, monks labored in meditative silence, hunched over their writing desks. Each manuscript demanded extraordinary patience and precision. A single Bible required an entire year to complete, with monks working through physical challenges, cold rooms, poor lighting, hours of concentration, seeing their work as both intellectual and spiritual service. Without their persistence, countless works would have vanished as old manuscripts deteriorated across Europe. The preservation effort gained urgency as political instability spread and secular educational institutions collapsed. Many classical texts existed only in a handful of copies. Benedictine monasteries emerged as primary repositories for written knowledge, islands of literacy, in a continent where reading had become increasingly rare. The manuscripts they preserved included works of classical thought that would otherwise have been lost to time. Benedict's rule facilitated this cultural preservation through its emphasis on daily reading. The practice of Lectio Divina required the monks to spend significant time engaged with texts, primarily scripture, but extending to other religious and classical works, and this daily habit ensured literacy remained central to monastic life when it was disappearing everywhere else. The rule provided enough structure to maintain this tradition while allowing flexibility in scholarly activities. What began as religious preservation expanded methodically. Benedictine libraries grew to include works of history, mathematics, and literature, and these monasteries developed sophisticated organizational systems, creating some of the world's very first library catalogs. They established networks for sharing texts between abbeys, allowing rare manuscripts to be copied at multiple locations, reducing the risk of permanent loss. Beyond passive copying, Benedictine scholars actively engaged with these texts, adding commentaries, comparing different versions, and reconstructing damaged sections. Their educational impact extended beyond monastery walls through schools that served not only future monks but also local children. These institutions became crucial centers of learning during periods when formal education had otherwise disappeared. The Benedictines preserved practical knowledge alongside philosophical texts. Their manuscripts maintained medical techniques, architectural principles, and agricultural innovations. Even modern musical notation evolved through their preservation efforts. This patient, centuries-long commitment created an unbroken chain of knowledge that would later fuel both the Carolingian Renaissance and the Great Renaissance itself, connecting ancient wisdom with the medieval world and illuminating the path toward modernity. 7. Benedict's enduring legacy. Today, the influence of Benedict's rule extends far beyond the monastery walls. It continues to provide a profound spiritual framework for both monastic and lay communities worldwide, offering timeless wisdom on balancing the essential elements in a fulfilling life. From preserving knowledge through Europe's darkest hours, Benedictine monasteries fundamentally shaped Western education, cultural preservation, and intellectual development through their unwavering commitment to learning, literacy, and systematic knowledge transmissions across generations. What makes Benedict's vision truly remarkable is its continued relevance. Modern Benedictine communities still apply his rule, demonstrating how the balance between contemplation and practical work resonates in contemporary contexts. This ancient wisdom offers a compelling alternative to our fragmented modern existence, inviting us to reflect on how harmony of purpose and balance might bring greater fulfillment to our own lives. I'm Justin West, and this has been a brief overview of the life of Saint Benedict. I am, in fact, a third order Benedictine, an oblate, not a very good one, but I try. And I'm trying something new on this channel by putting this information out there. If you found it helpful, please feel free to give me a comment down below. Let me know of another saint that you'd like me to do a deep dive on, and I'll put together another 10, 15, 20 minute presentation and try to do it in a way that is engaging and enlightening. And obviously, if you have any suggestions or anything I could do to make this better, let me know. Thank you very much. God bless.